welcome one and all once again to Duel Worlds in episode 128, joined this week by Daniel.
Hello.
And Martin.
Hello.
It has been a really quiet week for gaming. I guess you're really a huge fan of seeing Nintendo needs to be saved or why Nintendo needs to be saved. Articles are dumb. Articles all week long. So we will try to go through the show as quickly and as efficiently as possible. So let's kick it off. I'll kick it off actually this week because I believe this is a game Daniel and Martin suggested to me off air last week. I picked up Gunman Kai for my 3DS because it's $2 and I have it out of eShop points to burn through. And I'm really enjoying it. It's a really fun, very simple game, but, you know, for $2, I'm not really expecting the world changer. I really dig the art style. It kind of has like a kind of sketchy, rough sandpaper look to it. I don't know if that makes any sense.
But it looks like it was drawn on a bit of brown paper.
Yeah, It kind of like how you sometimes see, like, if you ever see like animation stills, like before they get it animated, they just kind of have this on paper to kind of see how everything feels.
Yeah.
This looks like if you took one of those and just kind of animated it. It's a really nice style, very unique. It animates nicely.
It works very well with a 3D, actually.
Yeah, it does. It's really nice. And I mean, just a mini rant, but this is always something that's kind of bothered. A big part of the indie movement recently has kind of been these retro graphics. And I always feel like that's one of the big things that some of the indie games do miss. And the difference between a good one and a bad one to me is a lot of them just kind of do the 8-bit stuff and they don't really kind of capitalize on the animation of it. Because a lot of times you get like these really stiff characters who don't really move. They just kind of glide along and whatever. Where Gunman Kai has a...
There was a game, actually, the one of the two games that I've kickstarted, it still hasn't released yet, but it's called Chasm, and it has the kind of 16-bit retro graphics, but, and usually, it's not like most other indie games, because they really did, like, focus on the animation, and it, you know, and I completely agree with that idea. I mean, I don't like this whole... I mean, I can understand if you're going for a retro graphic feel because you don't have any artists, but you need to put effort into it. And a lot of these games I've seen are just ugly. Just so ugly.
Yeah, just going retro doesn't mean it's necessarily good. There is some craft to pixel art, and you have to be good at it. Not every pixel art game actually really does look good. So, I agree. Gunman Clive actually looks really nice.
Yeah, right. Good music. The boss battles are kind of hit and miss.
Yeah,
that's true.
And I kind of agree with Daniel on the mushroom stuff. I know, like, it seems like you should time it so that you jump when you land on it, but sometimes it seems like it's a bit off on the exact timing.
I'm like actually stuck because of those bloody things. I can't progress.
I got through it. I really don't, like I said, I really don't remember having that much of an issue with it, but it's been a while since I played through it.
Yeah, and it has a decent variety of enemies. So far, my favorite have been the kind of horse, the horsemen, just because I like how the horses look, they kind of takes the style, and it's very different because like they're filled in.
Yeah.
Mm.
And I kind of like them because I didn't expect them to come. It's like, oh shit, there's a horse thing. Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, it's fun. And just kind of really quickie, I've been playing Banana Kong because somebody pointed out how much it looks like a Donkey Kong ripoff, and it was free on Android, so I figured I might as well try it. And I'm really curious how many ways can we dress up an Endless Runner on mobile phones. But, yeah, because I have Endless Runner. Now I have one with a monkey. I have zombies. I have chains. I have Shaq. I have... It's just like half the mobile games I play are either Endless Runners or they are puzzle games. Those seem to be like the OU2 types of games that really do a great job on this service.
Banana Kong apparently is also on iOS.
Yeah.
And Jesus Christ, they even have like animals to ride on, stuff like that. That's really, really Donkey Kong-ish.
It's funny you mentioned how many ways you could dress up an Endless Runner, because the Sonic one, I had a guest lecture from the guy who headed that game up, so, you know.
Oh.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I mean, it's a fun game, but if you've played them one, you've probably played them all.
I kind of done with them. I really don't not.
Yeah, because they aren't that really much different, and yeah. They don't really evolve beyond the. Like, what happens at the end of this runner, and I guess the reason it works, is you basically make one stage with, I guess, different elements to it, and then you just keep on doing it and giving people, like, different obstacles or to make... Like, there's no real progression. Like, it doesn't evolve beyond that one stage, that one core concept of just run as fast as you can or run as much as you can or buy these upgrades so that you get a head start or that you get one extra life if you get hit or something stupid like that.
The last one I remember that kind of tried something was Punch Quest, I think it was called.
Yeah, I played Punch. I played a couple. I played that. I played Run Night or Wind Up Night, I think it was called. There's a Jet Rocket one. There's a lot of games in that genre, so it's a really. I guess it's the first person shooter of the mobile app scene. Oh, Gravity Guy's the one I played. Jetpack Joyride.
Jetpack Joyride was also very good.
Yeah, but the thing is, these are, I don't know if you remember these games, it was really old. There was like an old school PC game. It was kind of like, I forget if it's called, it wasn't Snake, but basically you control the spaceship with a space bar. You pressed it, you held down the space bar to go up, you go to space bar to go down, and it was just like, trying to navigate obstacles.
Oh, that stupid helicopter game.
Yes.
Yeah.
This is basically what those are now. Just like 12 years later with different technology. It's the same thing I played on the PC for free when I was like bored. And it's pretty much the same thing I use it for now. I get bored. And it's a really fun time waster. But I played this and I'm like, I've played this game before. I've played it with airplanes. I've played it with cars. I've played it with Shaq. I've played it with zombies. I've played it with monkeys. I've played it with a knight. I've played it with a sword. I mean, it's like, at some point, I really want to see what's going to be the next big breakthrough with mobile gaming. Like, when is it going to cross that threshold beyond kind of, I guess, simple time wasters into something more media? Or is that something that's never going to happen? Because do you want that on your smartphone?
See, that's why I don't like mobile games at all, because they just don't mean any. I can't get anything out of them because they're just there to just destroy time. Whereas I could just bring my 3DS with me, which is what I do anyway, thanks to Street Pass, and play that.
I don't know. Yeah. I have played mobile games that have been really good, and there.
I'm not debating
some...
how good they are because I own some.
No, I don't mean just destroying time. I mean there are some generally good games. I think. I mean I've talked about Republic, and I think Sorcery, for example, is another really great one. Which is basically taking like the old choose your own adventure book idea and making it really into a good mobile game.
You mean Sword
and
Sorcery?
No, Sorcery. Oh. Actually, which is actually written by Steve Jackson.
All right.
And I'm going to agree with Martin. I do think that it's good mobile games. So I wouldn't keep trying them out. I have a ton of them that I kind of rotate through. But at the same time, and it's kind of that noise ratio. So many of them are so samey and so generic. That
really, I agree on.
You really do have to search out. I mean, one of the things is, I added, you know, like this recommendation came when I was checking Twitter. If you go to like NeoGAF, they have a decent thread on iPhone and Android games as well. And that's a good way to find it. But yeah, there are, like, you can sometimes search for a game you know, and you'll get hundreds of results of very similar games or games that kind of have similar naming schemes. And that's something we'll get into in a bit with the Candy Crush Saga stuff. But yeah, the marketplace is just really not conducive to finding quality games.
Yep.
And you don't really have, I mean, maybe it's because I don't look hard enough, but I also feel like you don't have that. You know, like with console gaming and PC gaming, the industry is so focused on that, you usually hear about the cream of the crop. You don't necessarily hear about the stuff that comes out that nobody's going to care about or the really generic stuff. And I'm not talking about like the really generic stuff like Medal of Honor and stuff like that. I'm talking about the really, I had a friend who mentioned that they worked on Power Punch, which is a really big punch-out knockoff on the Wii that I've never heard of until somebody mentioned it to me specifically.
Yeah. And let's say on iOS, for example, I one of the bigger games last year, and which also showed up on a bunch of Game of Year lists I talked about, was The Room 2, for example, or also very popular was Device 6. I haven't finished it yet, but that's also a really interesting game.
I would also say that another part of the problem is going from, is a lot of it, and for good reason, it's kind of focused on iPhone gaming. So a lot of times you hear about popular games that aren't available on Android for one reason or another. Like I know, for instance, one of the ones that a lot of people talked about, actually, that we didn't get access to preparing stuff on Android now, was Ridiculous Fishing. I always wanted to try that out because a lot of people talked about it, but it wasn't available on Android for most of last year. And yeah, that's another thing. It's like the ones that people do talk about don't necessarily always come across every device. And I guess, you know, that could be the same for console gaming. But yeah, I think it's just the discoverability of a lot of these games and a lot of these products that really brings it down. But yeah, and I guess going back to the original point, it's like, if you're a developer, do you really want to work on a big game that's probably going to get ignored because you can't get discovered on the store?
Yeah, it's hard to be discovered on these mobile stores, so I get why you wouldn't necessarily want to create a big game like that. I mean, games like Republic and even like Infinity Blade are kind of the exception to the rule.
I think I could be mistaken. Is Infinity Blade on Android? Or?
No, it isn't.
Yeah.
Move on. What have you played, Daniel?
I bought Sonic on 3D on the 3DS, but I'll get into that probably next week. Aside from that, I haven't been playing a whole lot. I bought my DualShock 4, because I ruined my 360 controller and thought, if I'm going to replace it, I'm going to replace it with something brand new, I guess. So, it's taken me a while to get used to it. I'm now terrible at Sonic Racing because I have to get used to the new stick layout. But, I'm getting there. I mainly bought it because you could use the touchpad as a mouse, and that'd be cool for when I have to put my PC in the living room because we want to play some horror game.
And I guess it's also pretty nice for those Steam games that don't have full controller support, just partial controller support,
yeah.
I guess.
Yeah. The only thing is it's kind of hacked in, and you can tell, because like when I was playing Borderlands 2 earlier just to test it out, when the touchpad enabled, you press L2, and the computer would interpret that as a click, the left click, and in Borderlands 2, that button uses your action skill, so it does both at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
So, but you can turn it off. Whoever developed the driver is actually pretty smart. They developed a kind of a hotkey, I guess,
okay,
pressing the controller, and it's L2. L2, and you push the touchpad in to disable the mouse emulation.
Okay.
Or you press L2, R2, and the touchpad in to turn it back on again. So that's kind of cool. I bought a Bluetooth adapter so I can have it wireless. So that'll be nice when that comes. My only problem is it would have been nice if it came with a cable. I know people have got like a million of these cables floating around with their phones.
Yeah, and you get one if you buy the PS4.
But it would be nice to have gotten one, considering the controllers are expensive. I bought this one at £40. But if I was to go into a game store and buy it, it'd be £60, and I was like, I'm not paying that.
I actually didn't pay that much. It's way cheaper over here than apparently, because
I should have imported it.
Official pricing is, I think, what did I pay for mine? I think €55.
Yeah, I think I'm gonna import them from now on, because the controllers are just too expensive. Fucking £60 for a controller.
I also have to say, it was really hard to find one over here
for a while. Well, in order to get mine at £40, I had to wait for a website to have it back in stock. So,
yeah. I mean, we had, I saw like not too long ago, I think end of last month, I went to a shop and like one of the biggest electronic chains here in Germany. And they had like this big poster in the window, which said, PS4 controllers now available again. Not the console.
The controllers.
Just the controllers.
Honestly, I'm not surprised, because I know that Sony's I guess production lines have been kind of strained due to demand, and I know they would rather want to bundle the controllers with the system than sell them separately. So
it was still funny to see.
Yeah, I mean, I can understand why, because I'm a devout Xbox controller person, and it's just a shame that the Xbox One controller is not better than the 360 controller, because I would have bought one of that. Well, actually, they don't even work on PC, so great.
And although the PS4 one is really comfortable.
It is, and I don't like the DualShock 3 at all.
Yeah.
And I love the DualShock 4. I still think the 360 controller, like, I prefer the 360 controller still, but
I no longer. I really like the DualShock now.
But I thought, you know, if I need a new controller, and I plan on getting a PS4 in the future anyway, so why not get one that works with both?
Yeah, that's true. You're already set for multiplayer games.
Yeah.
I was going to say, why wouldn't you just wait for the PS4? But
because, then I have a spare one kicking around, and I won't have to go, oh, where did I find that one PS4 controller I had? And I, I have to say, though, the downside of me owning a DualShock 4 now is that the temptation to get a PS4 is now higher. as if it wasn't high enough already.
It's not that much of a downside.
Well,
we all like shiny things.
But it has no games on it. That's the only problem I have. It has no bloody games, and I'm not going to buy a PS4 until there's games on there.
Just wait.
I'll wait until June time, because then Infamous will be out and stuff.
Yep.
Aside from that, I haven't played anything. I bought some game that was on a 3DS eShop on sale for like £1, and if your game's on sale for about £1.50 on the eShop, you can't stop me from buying it. I don't know what it is. I have like a compulsion or something.
But that's the point of an impulse purchase,
yes,
price.
Yes, that's the point. It wasn't particularly great. I think it was like Alien Chaos 3D. It's a very simplistic side-scroller where you shoot aliens in a very small space. I was like, oh, this is okay. I'll probably play it enough to give the review on the eShop and then never play it again, like most eShop games that I bought.
You have to pay a certain amount to review a
game. You have to play it for an hour in order to submit a review. It's an interesting system, actually. Yeah.
That's actually really clever.
Metacritic needs something like that.
Yeah, but Metacritic has no way of tracking, whereas
it's need something like that. Team up with Raptor, since you can track everybody's opinion.
Yeah.
This questionnaire about the game before you can write your review.
I mean, honestly, because I'm sure you've gone to Metacritic during the time when there's been big releases, and it's like half the people are just like, it's 0 or it's 10.
It's not even bigger releases, though. I remember when Sanctum 2 came out, a lot of people were really upset that it wasn't exactly the same as the first one. So obviously the first reaction they had was to go onto Metacritic and vote it 0. You know, it's a good game. It's on sale now, by the way, if you're listening to this. I don't know if it will be while the Son of Podcast comes out. But it's a great game, just because it wasn't exactly like the first one. The first reaction was to go on Metacritic and vote it 0, and then go on the Steam forums and complain about it.
On the other hand, some reactions are actually pretty accurate. I still remember, like, the review disparity between the professional reviews and the user reviews of Dragon Age 2.
Oh, I'm not saying that there's anything wrong with user reviews. I'm just saying it would be nice if there was a system to know.
Yeah.
Like, if the person actually played this game. And,
yeah, like, sometimes people are just trolling, but in case of, like, Dragon Age 2, for example, I don't even know what some reviewers were playing, because that game is really crappy.
Actually, Steam does that when you submit a review. It shows, it doesn't stop you, but it shows everybody who looks at your review how much time you have playing it.
Yeah, that's also really cool.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
I noticed that. I actually caught myself reading those reviews now more often than I thought I actually would.
There's actually an extension for Chrome, and you can, if you do a lot of hacking, you can put it into the Steam client as well, and it shows you on the games page what the consensus is through Steam reviews.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, it's really cool. Oh. It's called Enhanced Steam if you're interested.
I think I have this that plugin installed. I have to check out the Steam page, I guess, and see if it's on there.
It gives you a percentage of thumbs up to thumbs down, which is really cool.
Hmm.
Just as a currently quick aside, since we're already on this topic, do you think somebody needs to finish a game in order to review it?
No.
Not always.
Because I gave you a decent, I give you a good enough review of Gunman Clive, and I haven't finished it because I can't. You know.
I always. Tell
people... you have to at least spend decent time with it. I don't expect you to write a good review of 40-hour RPGs after 2 hours.
I mean, I guess it depends. I could see the time discrepancy, but at the same time, it's kind of one of those things. It's like, if this isn't gonna grab you in the first, like Final Fantasy 13 is a good example. Okay, not a great example.
Wait, after 2 hours, I might have given this a positive review.
Okay. Well, I mean,
it dragged on for quite some time.
Okay. You see, I guess that would be the difference. Is I would expect a negative review. If you can't finish it, not a positive review. Like, if you're going to give it a positive review, I think you either need to say the bulk of it or need to finish it. But I do think it says a lot about somebody if you can't finish a game. Like, I think that, you know, like, more than anything, I reviewed a movie this week, and I said, you know, I said a bunch of stuff, and I gave it a great score on the site. But ideally, to me, the thing that really stuck out to me more than anything is, like, I finished the movie, and I want to watch it again. That, to me, is the ultimate sign of something, is like really how you feel, not how many words it can say about how great it is.
Okay, let me tell you this. I had to review for the radio Shaktopus. And I got the Blu-ray, and I actually fell asleep during it. And I really didn't want to watch any more of it. So I asked my editor, so... I think this movie is total crap, and it put me to sleep. And his answer was, just put it in the review. It's totally fine. Just say it so
bad
I
think
put it to sleep.
As long as you disclose... I mean, because I like Deus Ex Human Revolution, but I got to that first boss fight, and I stopped. I have not picked up that game again. That's how much the boss fight tainted me. I like the game, just the boss fight ruins it for me. And I think that if you... You know, there obviously you need to be able to get a certain handle on how the game is or what the movie is. But as long as you say, you know, I didn't finish the game, I got X far into it, and then you can give good enough reasons for why you like or don't like the game, then that's fine.
Yeah. And by the way, on the topic of Human Revolution, isn't there like this, isn't there Ultimate Edition patch out for a PC which should fix the boss fights?
Yeah, but I don't want to pay for it, and...
How much is it?
It's not expensive, but I just don't want to pay for it. Hmm. And, because as far as I'm concerned, Deus Ex is, the boat has sailed. And the game starts off, like, I'd have to start the game again from scratch, because the version that I played was the OnLive version. And,
ugh.
Yeah, I know, but I paid £1 for it. it was the online version, and, I'd have to start the game again, and the game has some really weird, things at the beginning that I don't like at all. Like, if you drop 2 feet from the air, you die. And I'm like, what?
I really don't remember any of that.
So,
but it's been a while since I played it. Like, I played through twice, actually, but...
and it's something that you have to dedicate time to, and time is not something that I have right now, so... Maybe I'll get to it eventually.
Have you played anything else?
No, not really.
Mm. Yeah, for me, it's also not really any new stuff. I played... two new games, I guess. One is not really new. I played some Animal Crossing because I got it from the when the UK Nintendo UK store had like the pricing error, so I got it for like £8, which I think is like €12, if I'm not mistaken.
Something like that.
Yeah, which is like super cheap compared to the 40 it would normally cost. And played a bit of that. I'm still not sure if I get the appeal of it. I think it's kind of interesting. So far, I guess I'll be sticking with it. Not sure really what I should tell about the game. It's really cute, though. I really like the characters in it. But yeah, it's weird that they basically in the beginning just let you collect stuff and catch fish and stuff like that, and that's basically almost everything you can do. And they tease me with, yeah, if all the other villagers like you enough, then you can do some more stuff. But at this point, I don't really know what that more stuff will be, so I guess we will see how that game further develops. And
see, that's why I didn't pick it up, because it just seems to be like just a slow, too slow a burner, and you know, it's this thing you have to do every day, and a lot of the time I don't know if I'm going to have time to do.
You don't really have to every day, I guess, and it's kind of a relaxing game. That's, I guess, mostly why I'm still sticking with it. It's not really something you have to really think much about. It's just cute and relaxing and something to kick back while sometimes doing something else while, I don't know, listening to a podcast and something like that.
Yeah, well, I have so many games. Like, I have Fire Emblem, I have yet to finish. I'm 12 hours into that, and I don't think I've even scratched the surface.
Really haven't. Well, the game's quite long.
I've still got Link Between Worlds to finish, because I'm sort of going through that very slowly. I've only just gotten to Lyrule Castle. I don't know how far that is.
First or second time?
When the Lyrule Castle is actually a dungeon.
Oh, you're at the end game.
Oh, am I?
Yeah, that's the end of the game. Yeah.
Oh, okay. It feels like I've missed out on so much, because I see the sort of medals list, and it's like, oh, the nice bow and the nice net and the nice this and the nice that.
That's just if you collect all these octopi babies.
Actually go get them, because the items are worth it, if you ask me. Because especially when you see somebody in that you met via Street Pass that has them, it's like, I want that.
Yeah, you basically can just improve your items to make them better. But it's not worth for everyone, to be honest.
Yeah.
It's worth it for the bow, for example, because you get a free shot.
Yeah.
And I guess it's worth for the boomerang. And probably for the fire and ice stick, I think.
And it's not the same thing, but also it's worth upgrading your sword.
I've done that once.
Oh yeah,
I have the yellow, the pink one, I think.
Yeah, you can do it. I believe you can do it two times.
Twice.
Yeah, in each world. But yes, by the time you kind of get, because I mean that's kind of how you ramp up the difficulty, because you do a lot more damage with it as well.
Yeah.
And yeah, well, the other thing I played, well, I wouldn't, like I said, I probably wouldn't recommend Animal Crossing at this point. I'd still have to play it more. At least I wouldn't recommend it at full price for what I got it. I mean, it was kind of a no-brainer to just buy it and try it out. The other thing I played was Paper Sorcerer, which is now on Steam, I think. You can also buy it directly from the developers, which is probably better because you give them more money. And you can actually also get a Mac and a Linux version at this point already, which are not yet up on Steam. And the game is also only $5. And it's basically an old school dungeon crawler, which it's built on Unity, but it's like first person dungeon crawler, and has this nice black and white paper craft style to it.
That sounds pretty cool, actually.
And you have some riddles you have to solve in the dungeons. You, of course, fight enemies. The enemies are just these black clouds, so you kind of never know what these enemies will be when you encounter them. And then the fights are turn-based, like in Dragon Quest or something like that. But they are pretty creative in how they do magic, for example, because you have energy, which builds up 1 point for each turn. And you have also sometimes focus attacks, or you can just focus to build up your energy. So you can do like special attacks. And they have some pretty creative ones, because you actually are not a good guy in this story. You are you are the evil sorcerer that was actually banned into this dungeon, and you try to escape. So all your party members are actually evil minions that you collect over your adventure. So it's actually really fun. So we have some creative classes. So with me, I have like the shield-bearing skeleton, which is a tank. I have with me a vampire, who is actually an offensive healer. So he can use his own health to heal party members, but also
really
can suck the blood from enemies to heal himself. And then I have like an abomination, which is basically like Frankenstein, who is like an anti-mage enemy guy. He can like disrupt magic and actually do more damage to magicians and stuff. And yeah, it looks like you will get like even more party members, but then you have to switch them out. You can have three at most, looks like. But so far, it's really good. I played like, I think, 3 or 4 hours of it. Really good. Like I said, $5 only, so...
I might just impulse buy that for $5.
If that sounds interesting to you, I would say just go for it. It seems really cool. I heard it's like, it's also not too long. I think I heard 12 hours. But I think for $5, that's totally fine.
Yeah, that's... It's just like, everything you say about that game, it just gets sounds better and better and better, and then... Yeah. Oh yeah, by the way, you're the bad guy. Oh, sold.
Yeah, it's really good. And in between, you have, like, these dungeon levels. So you go, like, you first clear the first cell block, and then you find, like, a town inside this prison, and there you have like a zombie merchant, and you can buy stuff, or there are also some secrets to find, but I don't want to spoil anything in that kind because it involves some puzzle solving, and yeah, and then you go from cell block to cell block and kind of try to find your way out of it. I'm very interested to see how it ends, if it will be like the evil returning and stuff like that, or if they throw like something else in there, but so far it's really good.
Yeah, that sounds really cool.
And I think they also plan to release it on actually on Android and iOS also sometime soon. I mean, it's Unity, so it shouldn't be too hard for them.
It's actually not. I mean, digressing a little bit, I'm working on a Unity project for the course I'm doing at university, and I was just like, oh, I wonder what it would take to get this running on my phone. And it's literally, like you get the control sorted out, and then you click a button, and that's it.
I would assume, like, a full game like that might involve some more shenanigans.
Oh, yeah, you'd have to do, like, bug fixing and stuff, but, like, that's usual, that's like, normal stuff that you'd have to do anyway, where you don't have to faff around with anything really to get it to run on Android with Unity. It's really cool.
Yeah, but like I said, $5. And I think if you buy it on the website, they promise to still give you a Steam key later on, I think.
That's pretty cool.
Okay. That's it.
I guess before we kind of move on, just real quick, while my internet's actually working this week, I also want to note that next week we're going to try something different for our show, and if it works out, we're going to be playing like a retro game and talking about it. I think the game we have decided, it looks like we're going to talk about the Sonic franchise in general, but we wanted to start off with Sonic 3 because next week marks the 20th anniversary of the game's release. Yeah. So we figured it was fitting.
I think I will also check out, though, playing Sonic 3 with Knuckles, I guess.
Yeah, I guess
probably
that
not
would
through
work.
The whole thing, but just so we can maybe talk about that as well, because it's kind of a weird thing, but also a cool thing.
Yeah, it's a kind of a one-off thing. I guess we could talk about how they were going to try to replicate that with Banjo-Kazooie and Banjo-Tooie that never came to fruition.
Yep.
Or at least that's the story that they originally... I think they changed that since then. But yeah,
The original idea with Banjo-Kazooie was like that you have to rip the cartridge out while the game was still running.
Yeah, and they did. I mean, nowadays you can probably do it because, you know.
Well, like, we could do it back then, but it might not have been a good idea.
Yeah, but now, I mean, because, you're accustomed to kind of swapping disk, and the devices allow you to do that. Nobody does it, though. I mean, Mass Effect does it, I guess.
Mm.
It's not the same thing.
Yep.
And we could talk about playing Sonic and Knuckles with other Sonic games.
Yeah,
or not playing Sonic and Knuckles with other Sonic games.
I don't think I've ever done. Have I ever done that?
You can. I believe you can get Knuckles in Sonic 2, and then I think a bit.
I definitely played Sonic 2 with Knuckles. That's what I did. That.
And then I think the other one was just extended bonus stages after telling you it wouldn't work for like 5 minutes.
Hmm.
Yeah. News. Let's kick it off with King.com, which is the most fascinating story of the week for so many reasons. So the whole saga actually began before we recorded last week's episode, but we didn't have time to touch on it. And it's a good thing, too, because it unfolded over the course of the week in a most fascinating way. And it's still unfolding, so it's not like the story's finished. But King.com, the makers of Candy Crush Saga, were able to trademark the word candy, which is ridiculous on so many levels to begin with. But in doing so, they were also going after games that had candy in the title on any mobile device. And I believe they also have this for clothing, which I don't know how that extends that far, but whatever. So even games that had candy that were not 10th century related or a knockoff of Candy Crush Saga in and of itself were being taken down. And this is kind of where developers kind of lashed out and stuff like this, and the feedback came from. And as far as I know, the story evolved that they said they weren't pursuing these companies, but they were still holding their trademark claim over them, so their games couldn't remain on the Apple Store. So I believe the first pushback was earlier in this week when they decided that indie developers decided to do a game jam, which is, I believe, you make a game in a weekend?
Yeah, or something like that. It's within a time limit.
Yeah, within a time limit. And they decided to make any game you make over this game jam, which is this weekend, I believe, would have the word candy in the title to kind of screw with them. And that was the first major pushback. The other thing, I believe, and this is the, is that they had a Pac-Man clone on the website, and they released a statement saying that they don't clone games, so they had removed it.
Even stuff before that happened, because apparently not only do they have a trademark on candy, but they have a trademark on Saga, and naturally that means that they have to go after the Banner Saga, which is a game that just released that has nothing to do with candy. It's about Viking sagas. And so that name is only natural for, and it's.
I would get candy, and even I don't agree with that. But Saga's been a word that's been in video games for as far back as I can remember.
Well, and this is it, and you use a saga to describe something. Like, it's not a name or anything, it's a descriptive word.
But and to be honest, they are using saga in the wrong way, to be honest.
And this is a.
Well, actually, you heard the story to Candy Crush Saga, but.
And this is a really big problem, and it's not just like you can say that King is a bad company, and I wouldn't disagree with you, but this is also a problem of that the United States, at the very least, has had for a very long time, which is trademark law. Because, you know, if you own a trademark and you don't try to protect that trademark in every way you can, you risk losing it. Yeah. So, and not to mention that you shouldn't be able to trademark, like, just general words that have been used throughout culture for a long time, like candy. So, you know, King's only doing what they have to do, and I understand that, but they couldn't. They were given the. They shouldn't have filed for a trademark on candy because, you know, that's
they
a word.
Have gotten, no, they should have. I mean, they're within every right. They shouldn't have gotten a trademark.
Yeah, they shouldn't have gotten it. And you know, they definitely shouldn't, like Saga as well. And then going after the Banner Saga, which is completely unrelated to anything that King ever does. And then the cloning issue, where basically King has become the next Zynga.
Yeah.
You know, and I'm, like I said on Twitter, I don't understand why people didn't expect there to be another Zynga to pop up in Zynga's place. Because
it was just a matter of time.
In the mobile market where clones are basically how you work, because we were just talking about how many endless runners there are, you know? And how many, I bet you there are a million Tetris clones and a million, you know, in a mobile market where it's pretty much the Wild West and there are really no ethics at all, you know. I don't under, like, people should have expected a company like Zynga to return, and I'm surprised it's taken this long, to be honest. And it's just, it's completely ridiculous on all fronts. And I don't understand where we can go from here, because I can't see King reacting to the candy jam, to be honest. Because they're not going to, unless every single one of those developers is going to put their game on the App Store and make a big deal out of it.
And put candy in the title.
Well, yeah, they're going to put candy in the title because that's part of the kind of the interim requirements. Yeah. But like, I don't see it being a big enough like fanfare to attract King's attention for them to want to do anything about it. So I don't know how, if there is a solution to this problem other than, you know, the one that we've known for years, which is the United States needs to reform its trademark and copyright laws.
Mm.
But, you know, that's not going to happen because it would have happened by now otherwise.
The thing is, some of their claims, even the ones on candy, let's say trademark candy is okay, some of the claims are actually kind of legitimate when you look at, if you actually just search for Candyland on iTunes, for example, then you get some very obvious clones. So I can see a case being made there. But
well, the problem
I would hope
Candy Crush Saga in itself is a clone of Bejeweled, oh, yeah, which was a clone of some other game, right? And
yeah, like I said, I don't want to go there. Let's just stay here at this point. But I would hope that if a judge looks at, for example, their claim on like Banner Saga, for example, that he would throw them out of a courthouse.
Yeah.
Because it's ridiculous.
I don't know. It's indicative. It's a situation that's indicative of a lot of problems that the video games industry and the trademark industry and, you know, every industry has, where, you know, you get a patent for some or a copyright for something you really shouldn't have, and then you use it as a weapon to slap people in the face as much as possible.
Yeah.
You know, and it's really sad to see that laws that were supposedly designed to protect creativity are in fact doing the exact opposite as usual.
Yep. I mean, it's not too unsimilar when the Langdell stuff was going on and his trademark on the term Edge,
yeah,
right?
And that was thrown out at every opportunity, so...
Yeah. I mean, EA got after them and him, and he lost.
The problem. Is there going to be a company with as much money as King has to stand up to King?
That's exactly the problem right now. Because Stoic can't do that.
No. Well, they had to kickstart their game. Of course they can.
Yeah.
So, it's a problem, and that needs to be solved. I mean, even then, you can fight for a company like EA to come up and say and fight King, but at the end of the day, it's the lesser of two evils in some cases. So it's just sad that we live in a world that this is a thing that exists, I guess.
Yeah, it really is.
What else were we going to talk about? Oh, so we... WB announced this week, well, they didn't announce it this week, they actually showed off this week, Middle-Earth Shadows of Mordor.
Middle-Earth Shadow of Mordor,
and it looks pretty sweet. In fact, I don't know a lot of people that say otherwise.
No, the only thing I would say is, I think I mentioned it on Twitter, that it doesn't make much sense in the Lord of the Rings canon, but
well, I guess that's why it doesn't have the name.
But ignoring that, it actually looks like a pretty sweet game.
Yeah, see, I've never been a fan of Assassin's Creed, and a lot of people, in fact, maybe too many people, have drawn comparisons. But honestly, I think that it's doing what Assassin's Creed isn't doing, which is what Assassin's Creed needs to have done, I think, is they need to complement the gameplay like that they already have with something that sort of meshes with it quite well. Whereas right now what you've got is Assassin's Creed where one part is stabbing people and jumping across buildings, and the next bit is just standing on a boat, firing cannons at other boats.
Yeah, they have their core gameplay since part two down, and they just bolt other stuff onto it.
Yeah, and I honestly don't think that that's the way they should be doing it. They should be complementing it. Whereas Shadow of Mordor has a very cool kind of nemesis system where if you fail to kill a particular orc, I guess, they'll remember you, and they will recruit people to they will try and take you down at every point they get, and they will remember every single thing that you do to them. And I think that's really cool. I don't even know why somebody hasn't done this before, to be honest.
It was actually more impressed, like, with the relationships, basically, even between these different orcs that are apparently there.
Yeah.
They have, like, the system of, oh, this guy is way higher on the pecking order, and if you get to this specific guy, you don't necessarily have to kill him, although, you want to get rid of all those guys at some point, but you can just manipulate him in a way that he actually leads you to the guy who is the highest on the pecking order, so you can actually assassinate that guy. And I thought that was really cool.
The only concerns I had watching this video were, I know this is probably just a demo, because it's a demo, but
I think it's pre-alpha at this point.
Well, yeah. It just seemed like he was able to sort of, he had a lot of freedom considering he was in Mordor and there were orcs everywhere, and it's like, why hasn't he been seen yet?
Yeah, I mean, there was some obvious stealth gameplay going on, and I guess I would assume some of it was for demo purposes, and otherwise it also, they shown off some special powers that you have, because for some reason there is a wraith in you, and you can channel its powers.
I was thinking to myself, I don't know a lot about the Lord of the Rings universe, but surely that's not a thing that was established before.
No. But, I mean, from a gameplay perspective, it all looked interesting and fun, so I'm not going to complain too much about that. I also really liked when you talked about the memory aspect, that even you can actually fail assassinations, and those failed assassinations then influence those people you fight. They have the biggest guy, you fought him and you burnt his face, and then he reacted later on when you fought him again that he would try to burn you in some way. I thought that was really interesting and fun.
And this is actually something that I think more games should do, where, like, if you fail to do something, like, you shouldn't just be, oh, you failed on the screen and it puts you back at the last checkpoint. It should really just sort of, more games should be, oh, you failed, but we're going to continue on anyway. You're going to have to live with this failure at some point.
Yeah, I think games are an interesting thing.
Yeah.
It's because it was something I was thinking about, because there's that comedian, I forget who, I think it's USCK, where it's like video games that are only hobby you can actually be bad at.
Yes.
Like you can't be bad at watching a movie, you can't be bad at reading a book, but you can be bad at playing video games. And it's one of those things, but to a lot of people, if you don't have a fail state, it also kind of defeats the purpose of a game, because it takes away the challenge.
Yeah, which I would agree on.
I think it depends. I think there's room for both. I do think.
Well,
I think this is
what Shadow of Mordor is trying to do, is where, like, you failed to assassinate this one orc.
Yeah.
But like, obviously there were going to be failure states, otherwise, like, you died, you know.
Yeah.
But, like, just because you failed this one mission, it doesn't mean to say that the game stops and time gets reverted and you try it again, you know. Yeah. And I think that's really cool, especially in this kind of context. And I'm, like, especially surprised that Assassin's Creed hasn't done anything like this, because there's loads of room.
I also thought
like, it's interesting that it seems like there might not be that kind of rigid mission structure as in Assassin's Creed. I mean, that's at least the impression I got, that these assassinations you apparently can do then in which order you ever you want.
Yeah, it seems like a very free-form,
You just have to seek these guys actually out, actually find them in Mordor. Which I thought is interesting.
Yeah, I think it's really sort of taking on... Somebody at Monolith has obviously said, well, this Assassin's Creed's popular, but it has its problems, and we need to fix them.
Yeah.
And it's a shame that Ubisoft, which is the company that's in the prime position to do this, isn't.
Well, their problem, obviously, is that they are on a 2-year release schedule, basically, with each of their teams.
Yeah, I guess...
I would also imagine their problem, and we've had this discussion before, is that technically they don't have any reason to fix it if they continue to sell well.
Yeah, and if Assassin's Creed 4 is anything to go by, they don't really need to do a whole lot.
Yeah, it's like, because if you change too much, you risk alienating that big fan base you have now. Where this can come on, if it does well, Assassin's Creed can borrow some of those elements. So yeah.
I mean, although, at this point, I think really interesting. Did they actually say the release date? That's something I didn't pay attention to be honest. Did they say this year?
I don't think they even said anything about that.
Mm.
Yeah, it's interesting considering like what we've just been saying about Assassin's Creed and the drama, because of course there was drama around this that unfolded, where the Assassin's Creed 2 directors basically outright... He claims that Monolith stole assets and code from Assassin's Creed 2. And I don't know what gives him that idea. I mean, yes, it looks very similar and some of the assets look similar. But if the protagonists are doing the same thing, then of course the animations are going to look the same, you know? And I don't know. Like, you can't just be happy that somebody's taking a formula that you worked on, and they're improving it in some way.
Have they ever worked on an Assassin's Creed game?
What, Monolith?
Yeah.
No, because they were owned by WB.
Yeah, that's like, where would you steal assets from? Like, if they played the game and got inspiration from it, I can understand. But as you have proof of them, like, they didn't sit in there ripping off code from... And even then, I mean, that would be hard to prove. Like, I mean, like we saw with PlayStation All-Stars, where they had like, Smash Brothers in their office, like, get an inspiration from this, but yeah. That doesn't mean we're just going to steal these animations, because I would imagine it's a lot harder to reverse engineer something than it is to create it on your own.
Yeah, definitely.
And also, considering... I just found release apparently is 2014.
Oh, that's pretty cool.
Yep. Oh, one more thing about that game. Also, an improvement from Assassin's Creed. The combat system actually looks way more competent at what Assassin's Creed has at this point.
Assassin's Creed seems to me like... The reason why I never got interested in Assassin's Creed is because it seems like the combat is just far too easy. Like, they don't put any effort in making it a challenge or interesting. Whereas they seem to have varied it up quite a bit for Shadows of Mordor to the point where I'm actually I'm actually interested in it. I mean, and I think that combine that with obviously they've taken liberties with the lore, but the sort of the breadth of the lore, they've got a lot to work with, and we've had five movies now, you know. Even somebody like me who has never touched a Tolkien book or breathed the air near a Tolkien book, you know, I can appreciate what's been done there.
Somebody has problems.
The thing is, though, Daniel, maybe they are really taking liberties with him. I haven't actually read an article about the lore stuff, if they actually plan to take the liberties more
Well, even
well
if
in a
not.
more major way, because, like you said, it doesn't have the Lord of Rings name on it. And, I mean, at the end of the video, they even teased, like, taking on the big bad guy, which, of course, would be totally different from how it turned out in the real Lord of the Rings lore. So maybe they're like, well, we are taking these basic concepts and tell kind of a different story with it. Which I think would be cool.
Let's just hope they don't do a Star Wars The Force Unleashed 2.
What did they do in Star Wars Force
Unleashed 2? In The Force Unleashed 2, you can kill pretty much any character, like any major character in the Star Wars franchise.
Ah.
Yeah. It's kind of strange how they kind of, I would say, took liberties with it, but they just basically chewed on the lore and then spat it back out again. Yeah.
Well, I mean, in the first game, you were able to kill, I think you were able to kill Darth Vader or an Emperor. So, I mean, why not?
Yeah. So, yeah, it'd be interesting to see what they do with that. And I might pick it up on next gen, I'm not sure. No, I say next gen, current gen. I'm in the stage where I'm currently thinking about what games would I get on a console if I was to buy one.
Mm. But yeah, interesting game. I think we are slowly now at this point where people show more interesting stuff with games that might not have been possible on the last generation.
Yeah,
it's slowly creeping.
Well, hopefully it all works out as promised.
Yeah, of course it can always go wrong, but I don't. I want to hope that it works out.
I mean, you always want to hope it works out. I mean, and it's a pretty solid studio behind it, and in the last couple of years, I would say that the WB has been really good at giving their studio the times to make the games that they needed to make. Well, granted, I say that after the Arkham Origins, which was just full of game-breaking bugs, so...
Well, on the other hand, that was an obvious cash-in.
Yes and no. I mean, I don't disagree that it's an obvious cash-in, but obvious? I mean, it made no sense. It wasn't related to any
movie. It is obvious. It's not made by Remedy.
It's a prequel,
so it doesn't interfere with Remedy's storyline.
Like I said, it makes sense. I completely get that. I completely agree that it's a cash-in. I wouldn't say it's an obvious one, because... It would have made more sense either to do like Superman and Ashley with Man of Steel, or do it this year, which you have the big Batman 75th anniversary celebration going on all year. Last year was just kind of like, oh, we're on a 2-year cycle. Like, if you had, I guess it depends on what they're doing with Batman this year, if they're coming out with a game. But if you had released it this year or like mid this year and kind of done a cross gen port, I think that would have worked just as well. But yeah, either way, WB has a really decent track record recently, so, you know, there's that.
Interested, speaking of WB, I guess this E3 would be the time for a new Mortal Kombat?
Probably. I mean, it's been 3 years now?
Yeah. And there's no time like the present, because Capcom aren't releasing a fighting game anytime soon.
Yeah.
Well, aren't they doing the Ultimate Arcade Street Fighter 4?
Oh, they're doing... It's Ultra...
It's Ultra Street Fighter 4.
Yeah, Ultra Street Fighter 4.
But it's
I guess so.
Updated version.
But is that going to be on next gen?
No, of course not. It's just last gen.
Yeah. It's just last gen. And it's not like Ed Boon and his team are doing anything, as far as we know.
Didn't they work on Injustice, or is that a different team?
They just finished it.
They didn't even do the port for the PS4, as far as I'm aware. I think that was like Sony team involved. That's why it's only on PS4.
I meant more like they just, because it was 2 years between Mortal Kombat and Injustice, so it's kind of on that same 2-year thing. We would probably see it next year for Mortal Kombat.
Yeah, next year, but reveal might be this E3.
Yeah, this year. Yeah, because it seems like they're pretty okay with having their fighting games come out in April. That seems to be their time frame now, which works.
Yeah.
And
I'm really interested to see what a next-gen fighting game could look like, to be honest. that's
I'm
built
not,
from the ground up.
Just me.
But, I mean, I also kind of want to see how gruesome they can get.
How much blood we can have on screen at once.
Because, you know, it's Mortal Kombat. It's part of the fun.
Yeah.
So, you know, since I was here for like a quarter of this episode, is there anything that we missed or that you folks talked of, haven't talked about yet?
I don't think there was really any other big news, right?
There wasn't really any big news this week.
Yeah, if you want to look at it like that, yeah.
Yeah, next week should be interesting. I mean, most of the episode will be focused on Sonic, but it should be the end of Nintendo's fiscal year, and assuming other companies are... Well, actually, the end of fiscal quarter was yes, but a lot of people should be coming out with their stuff. Microsoft had theirs this week.
Mm. Maybe we'll get a surprise Nintendo Direct?
We'll get something from them, because if not, they do have the investors meeting, which I imagine they have to tell them something.
I kind of hope for Nintendo Direct. I want to know when Mario Golf is coming out.
Yeah.
I feel like if they do it, it's really going to be like 90% focus on the Wii U.
Yeah, probably.
And if the stars have aligned properly, as they should have done, Europe should get Pokemon Bank sometime this week as well.
Yeah.
Because Nintendo has an infrastructure maintenance downtime. So, hopefully...
Yes, maybe. And they heard you, Grant, because they commented on it the next day.
Yep.
So yeah, we'll be back next week with hopefully our Sonic Supercast and any news that comes out during that time. For Daniel, Martin, and myself, this has been Dual World, and I forgot the number. I want to say 129, 128, one of those two.
Professional.